Hi there, I'm Terry, I'm an addict.
Hi Terry.
Oh, that's strange hearing my own voice. It's not like the one I hear in my head most of the time. So, and as for talking for 40 minutes, I don't speak that much a week. I'm not the chatty type. But I speak more than I used to, which was not a lot at all. And I suppose, you know, I do chairs and they're sort of for 10, 20 minutes. So, I, you know, I've not thought about this since Gary asked me to do this until last night in bed trying to get to sleep. And it's... the cogs started to turn, and so did my stomach. And you know, all day today, I've just been so stressed out and just feeling like I'm being sick all the time inside. Because I'm not a public speaker, and I don't, you know, I've a few friends that I really trust and I can say anything to, but you know, this is all right. And what I'm gonna, I guess, talk about how it was when I was growing up, and maybe there's some early indications in there of it was going to be a lot of something that's not good for me. And then where it went to and how it is now and what I hope I'm heading towards. I was born in Mile End, and I don't remember much of that. And we moved to a place called Leighton, and that's sort of my earliest memories. I remember all this, how the house was and what was in the garden and that. And you know, the fact I had an older brother, 2.5 years older, and you know, it all seemed fine. You don't know. You grow up. You've got nothing to gauge it to. So it all seemed fine. And you know, he didn't like me. And you know, but you know, we still played out together. And you know, mum and dad was all right. There was no money at the time. And you know, but we didn't. I didn't know what lots of things was. So it didn't really matter at the time. But I remember, I think it was like 5, 6, 7. You know, the times that we were, you know, I know sort of like parents with their children now, and you know, they're not allowed out the house or past the front gate because of what goes on and stuff, which is you know, is right. But, you know, my gate was open, the door was open. And, you know, me and my brother and people from... the estate would go round to the deserted factories and the adventure playgrounds and just, you know, climb on roofs. And there's one factory. It was huge. It was disused for as long as I could remember. It was an old laundry, and there was like conveyor belts and that, and there was barbed wire everywhere. And I'd be, you know, jumping from roof to roof and up, you know, just no fear, absolutely free, not scared of anything. And, you know, falling through roofs, bouncing off the floor, getting back up, you know, cutting my legs on barbed wire and going home and having to go up and get them stitched. And, you know, you're back there the next day with a bandage, you know, throwing stones and bottles and breaking windows. And I loved it. It's and making dens and camps, and that to me was And I only thought about that today. That to me was absolute freedom and living in the moment. And it was beautiful. It was naughty, yes, but we didn't mean anyone any harm. We didn't go out to harm anyone or that. So, you know, it was a nice feeling to think that freedom is possible at some time in someone's life. And from there, that the next sort of, I suppose, first indication was fire. I got attached to fire and I used to make sure I'd steal the 2p or 1.5p to go and get some Bryant and Mays from the news agents, and every day go up there for the whole of summer holiday, go to this little place and just light the matches with my brother and another guy who liked fire as well. And and we used to do that day, you know, use them all up and make sure we got the money, you know, between three of us to get another box. And then that progressed into I guess, you know, we moved house and I think I was 7 or something like that. We moved out a bit, and I remember it was the summer of 76, and there was a big heat wave, and up the road, you know, we could get there by push bikes, was a big forest and huge fields and stuff. And every day we'd go up there and set light to the forest, and because we enjoyed helping the firemen put them out with their hoses. And every day we'd do that. We burnt so much forest. It was unbelievable. And again, didn't mean to do anyone harm, or it wasn't like that. We just light the fire engines and stuff like that. And you know, and all through this time, you know, life was normal as far as, like, you know, I know now there's like suicide attempts by my mum, and my dad was having affairs and all this stuff going on. I remember, you know, lots of time the dinners going up against the wall and stuff like that, and shouting, and, you know, mirrors breaking and all that stuff. But, you know, you just take no notice and just go and hide under the table or the bed. And from there, that was, you know, pretty normal. And you know, I suppose I started, you know, went through the changing of schools, and, you know, uncomfortable and shy, and you know, but I seem to make friends easy enough, and, you know, have a game of football in the playground, and you know, just go and be naughty after school. It's, you know, it was, there was no bad. It was just, like, I suppose, cheeky and naughty, and getting on old ladies' nerves. So, you know, I grew up like that. That's what I was doing. And, you know, had an older brother, it seemed all right. And I think, you know, I went up to the other school, the next school, which was, you know, my mum and dad tried to sort of help me learn more and stuff, and my brother, and you know, he was a bit rebellious, and you know, but we were not bright. We'd pick things up easy enough. And you know, he was at this certain school, and this school had a bad reputation, and you know, the parents would pray that they're not in the catchment area. And you know, and my brother wanted to go to that school. It was rough, and it was fighting all the time, and fighting the next schools, and bunking off, and that. And you know, I I think I'd done, you know, I think it was called the 11 plus or so, and didn't pass that. So I ended up going to the same school as my brother, and I started all right. You know, I was a good kid, and I didn't mind class and learning and stuff. And I kind of got tarred with the same brush as my brother, because he'd been a nightmare there. And it's like, oh no, not another, you know, one of them. And but I took no notice, and the years went on, and I made friends, and you know, arsing about after school, and you know, it was all good. And I had, you know, I had a best friend that I'd done everything with as well. I grew up with him, and you know, just didn't have to say much to each other, but we'd laugh and laugh forever and ever. And you know, this disease got hold of him, and he hung himself this year. You know, he's got two kids and stuff like that, and I ended up taking a service. It was bizarre and very sad. So, you know, I'm on school, and you know, there was you know, a wave of music coming through, and it was angry, hard, rebellious punk rock, and I loved it. And you know, I don't know, it just sort of set something alight in me that I didn't know was there. And I sort of hung around with some guys at school, and we'd, you know, start wearing certain clothes, and, you know, start wanting to go up the King's Road, and, you know, my mum and dad hated it and stuff like that. And, you know, but I went anyway, and I got... Yeah, and we'd be at school, and I think my first experience of the way I was going to do things was I think through, apart from the fire and stuff, was through drink. It'd be lunchtime, and my mum and dad would be out. We'd all go up to my house, and we'd go to my dad's drink cabinet and get an old pint bottle. When the milker used to come around, you get one of them pint bottles and fill it up with, like, oh, what was it? Like Campari and Ouzo, and it ended up brown, whatever it was. It was, it tasted all right to me, but it was just this strong stuff. I drank it and passed it round, and everyone would have a tentative sip and go, and a couple of, you know, a few of us. And I'd drink some and think nothing of it, just keep it down. So, you know, that's what I would do. And my first experience of taking something was drinking to get drunk. That's what I wanted. I liked the feeling, and, you know, I cared even less than I did before, and that was it for that school, really. It was going up to, you know, the West End just round here, and getting pissed and going to see bands and do anything. If something was offered me, I was at the Fulham Greyhound seeing this band, and a guy that I knew was outside drinking this thing out of a Corona orange bottle. So he let me have some, and I guzzled away, and it was the strongest thing I've ever drunk in my life. He gave me a handful of pills as well. I ate them, and I didn't get to see the band. It was Meths and Orange. And, you know, years later, I'm in someone's shed at a party looking for methylated spirits. It's not normal. You know, people would try and find their dad's drink or this and that, but no, I'd be in the shed looking for chemicals. And in that school, also, I, you know, solvents was a big starter for me. You know, the first thing, I used to go for football and buy a bottle of Zoff. I don't know if anyone knows it. It was like plaster remover, and just used to get high on that all through the football match and just hear things. And, you know, that was along with, you know, school. We'd at lunchtime it come and a few of us would go over to under this tunnel thing and sniff glue. And, you know, people would they'd all go back, you know, at some point when the, you know, for whatever reason, I don't know, I didn't really ask or have conversations. And I'd be there until it had gone, until there wasn't any more. And, you know, that's when I look back and I can see that I'm different. I do things differently. I think differently. But I didn't think it at the time. So, you know, that was it. It was just self-destruction from there then on. I didn't really have... I don't know if my thoughts were bad. I can't really remember. But, you know, at the age of, I think, 16, I had a little 50 motorbike and... It was in May Day or something. We was going to drive somewhere on our bikes, a couple of us, and a girl had nicked some money off of Dad and come along and asked us if she said, "Do you want anything from the off license?" And the guy next to me said, "Yeah, I'll have a couple of cans of beer." And I said, "I'll have a bottle of scotch." And... we did, and I don't remember what happened. I remember taking the bottle and putting it up my jacket and driving off. I don't remember drinking it, but I woke up a month later from a coma. I don't remember anything, and I had an accident. I've hit the curb, helmet's not done up, that's flown off, I've hit a lamppost head on and smashed my skull and straddled the lamppost. My leg was wrapped around my neck and blood was pouring out of my ears. And I was dead on arrival at one of the hospitals, and they've got me going, and then they've had to police escort me up to St. Bart's to put me on the necessary equipment, and I was in intensive care for a while. So I come out of there, and this was 16, and I've, you know, they put me on heavy phenobarbitone. I've come out of the coma, and, you know, I've had to learn to walk again and all that shit, and I look like shit, and, you know, people were coming up the hospital nearly being sick of the sight of me just because of the mess I was in. And I was put on these heavy barbiturates, and I didn't know what barbiturates or this, that, or the other was, or what they were. But they were pills, and you know, the first thing I'd done, you know, on crutches, I've just started all over again. You know, beers with the barbs and getting into trouble and just being off my head, eventually, so I don't know what happened, but I remember sort of, I don't know, trying to be normal, I think, and going in pubs with a new lot of friends that I kind of met through a friend. And I just did, you know, this is the age of 16, and then I just, you know, drank a lot and, you know, smoking joints and doing some speed and... and that was how it was. And I got introduced to heroin, and I said, yes, of course. And I did it, and I was sick and I felt warm, but I liked it. And, you know, it was a little while before I'd done it again, then I'd done it again, and, you know, done it again, and then, you know, before I know it, you know, I've got a habit, and... you know, I'm just doing it, and you know, I would end up going to any lengths to get the money to get the drugs. And I ended up in prison when I was 18, and you know, come out of there, and everyone's still supporting me, loving me. My friends, don't, you know, please don't do it, you know. And I just did it again and again, and I hurt so many people, done so much harm to people who really do love me, and you know, that was from the age of, you know, when I started and until the age of I was 28, you know, doing absolutely crazy things, just, you know, going to Ibiza to stop, you know, because as soon as needles were offered to me, it was yeah of course. And you know, I've done a lot of damage, and you know, I went to Ibiza to get to come off. Genuinely good idea. And within a week, I was in jail. You know, 3 days in the police cells, beaten up, guns pointed to my head. It was unreal. Sort of couldn't have done anything worse. It was the Guardia Civil out there. They are absolute, you know, beasts. And I stole a bag that was full of scuba diving gear. I don't know why. I didn't need it. And but that's what I did with a couple of other blokes at about 8 in the morning, pissed. And, you know, one thing's led to another. My door's been kicked in. The bag belongs to the two worst Guardia Civil on the island. The bag belongs to their friend who's come to teach them scuba diving, and they wanted it back. And, you know, it was the unwritten code, and they wanted to know where it was, so, and where the other people were, and I didn't tell them, and they just done everything they could. They, you know, broke my ribs and just took me to these deserted shacks and, you know, pointed guns down my throat, and that was it. You know, I didn't really care. I did not care if I went then or not. And, you know, 3 days went to court. Judge weren't there. Took my statement through an interpreter. And they went, "You're going back to jail." And I went, "Oh, fucking hell." So I did. I went to jail, but not back to the police. I went to jail, and it was actually a relief to be in there because of how I was treated before. And, you know, eventually, I don't know how long it was, but someone comes up and says, "Oh, you go now." And, yeah, funny system. But a guy who was in there, for, I think he was doing 14 years for murder. I got friendly with him. And I actually got offered drugs in there, but I actually said no, because there was, like, so many gypsies and that just sort of giving me funny looks. And he read my my statement that I'd done through an interpreter, and the Englishman who was in for that all that time read it out, and they had added bits on that I didn't say. So, you know, eventually I got out, and I, you know, I see the two Guardia Civil and just see them, and they was after me, and I just got off that island as quick as I could with a dodgy ticket, and I got back to England, and started all over again. You know, just doing the damage, doing the shit, just not caring, absolute, you know, going to any lengths. And you know, time's getting on. So eventually I court cases, nut houses, solicitors, you know, doors being kicked in by the police, arrested, you know, week in, week out, always shit, and just being an absolute damage for everyone. And eventually, via a probation order, I met a drugs counsellor who was clean, and she was harping on about this place, and, you know, it was a treatment center, and I just, you know, the amount of detoxes and, you know, inpatient, outpatient, I try to do. I used to get down to a certain amount and just start having a feeling, I guess, and think, oh, fucking hell, and what's after using? I don't know what's after using. That's too scary. I can't do that, and just carried on. You know, I don't know. But I eventually ended up in a treatment centre. Didn't get it. I think I used a couple of times in there. Went to another one. My nan died. Come back from there. Good excuse to use. Went back. Got chucked out of there. And, you know, I didn't get it. And these were sort of NA... No, they're 12-step treatment centres. And they used to bring people in to do chairs and stuff. And, it's all right. I weren't that bothered about cleaning up, but I was there for whatever reason, just to, you know, keep people. I don't know, I can't burn all my bridges. So done that, and you know, got thrown out of secondary and come back to London and stayed clean for a while, for I don't know, I think a couple of weeks, and I went to a couple of meetings and didn't like them, so I didn't go anymore. And eventually I picked up, and it was kind of surreal because I'm walking down the same rows, ringing the same number, up the same steps, along the same corridor, buzzing, and I can see myself, and part of me is like, no, don't, you don't, but you just do it anyway because it's all I knew and all I, you know, knew that was. So I eventually went back to a treatment centre. You know, I relapsed for 2.5 years, just done all the damage again, you know, jails, institutions, death, you know, waking up with your clothes cut off you in hospital, and, going to use again, going to do more damage, and, you know, all that shit that goes with it. So, eventually, I'm trying to rush now, I've got 5 minutes, I think, I've gone into treatment again. And went through secondary, and something changed. And you know, I'd done a detox, done a cold turkey, and sort of the desire to use had been lifted, which is not me, because that's what I like doing. And I left there, and I remember there was a guy after lunch. The counsellors would come and do a lecture, and everyone would like be in the hall and fall asleep and this, that and the other. But there was one guy who was in recovery. He'd been clean about 9 years or something, and I remember his voice. It's like he was a white guy but had an Indian accent. He had lived in India for a long time, I think, and all he used to harp on about was go to meetings. 1990, work the steps, go to meetings. That's all he would go on about, and kind of saved my life, because when I eventually left there and came back to London, got myself a little job and a flat, and it was really scary because I had no social skills, really. I didn't, you know, know where to look on someone's face when talking to them, and, you know, all that stuff. And it was difficult, and I found being in my life difficult and uncomfortable. But all I had in my mind was his voice saying, go to meetings. So I did. I went to meetings, and I kept going to meetings, and I kept going to meetings. I hated the way I felt. I felt uncomfortable, but people would, you know, welcome me, and I'd keep, you know, keep going back to these meetings. And that's what I've done. I've kept going to meetings. You know, I've tried always to stop using. I've tried doing it my way for so long, until I tried this way, and it's the only way I'm sure that works, and that it works for me. I love it. I love NA. It's my favorite thing. It's, you know, I've achieved so much, and I go to meetings regularly. and I've been through so much in recovery, you know, the ups and downs, the relationships, you know, my dad dying, you know, people dying, best friends dying, and, you know, I haven't picked up a drug. There's times when I just feel like fucking shit and I want to cut myself. But I don't want to pick up. I feel like getting really pissed sometimes. And just going out and snogging someone. And just, you know, that freedom. And, you know, I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. No reservations about the program whatsoever at all. But I do resist change sometimes, and that's normally what causes me pain. And you know, I'm willing, I am, but like I was willing to do this chair, but I just didn't fucking want to because it felt uncomfortable all day, and I don't know anyone, I don't want anyone to see me. But I'm willing to do it. But my willing is not what's in the dictionary. In the dictionary, it says cheerfully ready. I've never, ever been cheerfully ready or cheerful. And that's the case for me. I have to be damaged, hurting in the corner. Just no more, please God, take it away. I don't want to live like this anymore, you know. And this is just me living a normal life. And it's me, and it's how I've been. I am or I'm not. I'm all in or I'm not. It's I do or I don't. The middle ground I don't know about. I don't understand that. It's just like social drinking. I don't get it. I've never done it. I never want to. So I've been, my time's getting on, isn't it, Dave?
5 minutes.
Oh, all right. So, recovery is, you know, I've tried to do it my way, for so many years, and listened to myself for so many years, and, you know, this, you know, it scares some people off, you know, the word God and stuff like that. But, you know, it's whatever keeps me from doing all that damage. You know, the word God is just a noise that comes out of my mouth when I go, God. It's nothing more than that. But I believe that whatever makes my feet walk to this meeting, whatever makes me read literature, whatever makes me go towards a newcomer, whatever keeps me alive, that's my God, and that'll do for me. And that's, you know, I don't know if it's the NA way or what, but I do what my sponsor says. You know, I've got no problem with that, because I tried my way and it's never worked. It's all right for a bit. You get a reprieve, but eventually I am who I am, and my default setting is very destructive, very hateful towards myself. It's not like I think I'm shit. I know I'm shit. And that's what I have to wake up with. And it's not been so bad lately, but I there was like a few months of just waking up and just going, fucking hell, I fucking hate you. And just feeling like shit and convinced that it's going to be a difficult and uncomfortable day feeling-wise. That's how I wake up. Not so much at the moment. But that's how I woke up for a long time. This is only a few months back. And, you know, that brings on paranoia and this. And, you know, the disease just fucking resurfaces and regenerates and turns into something else. You know, and the more spiritual I get, the more cunning it gets. And, you know, it's a killer. It wants me dead. You know, the voice I hear in these speakers is not the one that I can hear inside. That's what I've just found out. And, you know, I've got so much gratitude for these rooms. It's kept me alive. I love coming to meetings. I love the people who come to meetings. Everyone's different. There's no definite way anyone has to do anything. You know, there's a program there if you want it. And, you know, it's up to you how long you want to be in pain, really. It's my only way out, anyway. And I've been coming to meetings regularly. You know, I still do 4 a week, and that's kept me clean for 13 years this week. Thanks.